Are you ready? Are you ready to take massive action towards building a life and lifestyle that rewards you with a fit body, endless supplies of mental and physical energy, and total freedom from guilt around food and exercise? This is Cut the Fat Podcast. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Ray Hines joined here with Blythe Wagner. Hey, Blythe.
Hey, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm awesome and wonderful. And yourself?
I am fantastic, as always, and kind of excited. You know, we're moving into the spring, summertime. I'm not sure when our listeners are hearing this, but in the U.S. here, we're moving into spring and summer. And we've got our new 60-day challenge that is about to open up. And I'm loving the fact that this is such an international group. We've got people from all over the world. And I'm actually just getting excited because it kicks off here in a couple of days. So that's kind of got me buzzing a little bit now.
Awesome. Yeah, me too. Yeah. And today's podcast has me buzzing too, because it's getting into one of my favorite topics, which is mindset. We get into a lot of topics around diet, exercise, but to me, the battle with weight loss is in the mind, is really how do we take all of these wonderful strategies and tactics and implement them consistently within our lives and not get derailed. And in today's episode, really, we're talking about what's called the four inner voices. And these are the things that really derail us, right?
Oh, absolutely. I find it with every single client I have ever come into contact with. We all have these inner voices. These aren't things that are, you're a certain way or you think this way. There are certain inner voices that I think if we can detect and name them and understand that those are the things, those are the thoughts that we're having, then it can help us along the journey. It's not the most comfortable topic because sometimes you start thinking, oh, geez, am I doing that to myself? And you're kind of, it's something that we need to address. And if you're not aware that it's happening, that's why we're bringing you this podcast.
So whenever you decide to change, you will be met with what Howard Gutman in his book, Coach Yourself to Win, calls the four inner voices. And these inner voices are your defense systems that try to keep the status quo. So the mind and body value safety and security and will do everything in their power to keep you from exploring distant and unknown lands. The body will tolerate change by necessity because by definition, there is no choice. Right. But whenever there is an option, it will try its best to test the necessity of the change through what we call resistance and inner friction. And that's the thing with weight loss and with body transformation, there is always an option.
Right. Absolutely. There's always an option. And we usually choose the easiest option, right?
Exactly. Or the one that's most comfortable or the one that's most convenient. And so in today's episode, we're going to get into these four inner voices that want you to take that easy road, right?
Okay. Yep. Should we name the four?
Yeah, go ahead. List them out for
everybody. So we've got the critic. Okay, that's number one. Number two is the cynic. Number three is the rationalizer. And number four is the procrastinator. And I think most of us can find a little bit of each of these voices in our daily lives.
So let's go through each of these four inner voices in the context of weight loss. Okay. So having worked with many people who struggle with weight, both you and I mean, it's probably in the hundreds, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I can tell you that these voices are alive and active in most people who decide to lose weight. Now, after we go through each of these voices, I will teach you, and we want to get into the antidote for these voices, but we have to kind of go through, name them, and then explain what each one is. Cool?
Okay, cool. Let's do it.
All right, so the first one is the critic.
Yes.
Now, this voice says stuff like, you're going to try to lose weight again? You're nothing but a lazy pig.
Right? Critics also, you know, just think about critique. We're critiquing ourselves. We're critiquing others. We're critiquing programs. We're worried about what other people might think. So self-critique there. You might, you know, especially in the gym, you might be concerned that people are looking at the way you're dressed, or, you know, how much weight you have to lose, or maybe even looking at you thinking, does that person even know what they're doing in the gym? You know, those types of things happen a lot. Quite often these people have low self-esteem and they feel embarrassed. They lack confidence because of the low self-esteem. You know, you've tried this so many times, I'm setting myself up for failure again. So this is like a forethought that's already pushing you backwards.
Right. And of the four voices, this one is hands down the harshest. And we really need to stand guard against this one, because this one can really tear you down. And, you know, all those things you just mentioned about, you know, like you're walking into a gym, you're thinking other people are looking at you or talking about you. Mm-hmm. Well, that then goes to trigger the inner voice, the things that we say to ourselves that ultimately kind of beat us down, right? So those people are not doing anything to us. It's us inside. It's our own thoughts that are basically beating us down. And so we really have to watch out for the critic, because it can really do a number on our self-esteem.
Absolutely. And I wanted to touch on like the other side of the critic. Something I thought of when we were coming up with this podcast is, sometimes people say, well, I don't want to lift heavy weights because I don't want to look like She-Ra, or I don't want to look like a bodybuilder. So I put on muscle easily, so I can't do that. And again, that's all in your head, because if you don't already look like She-Ra, or you've never looked like She-Ra, you're never going to.
Right. Absolutely. So the next voice is the cynic. Now, this is the voice that says, you've tried to lose weight 1,000 times before. This time will be no different. Sure, you right. may lose a little weight, but you'll just pick it and back up. You'll put it back on. Face it, you're going to be fat forever.
Right. You kind of predetermined your outcome at that stage. And this is that, what we call the Felicia voice coming through, right? That nasty
right.
Felicia that's telling you that you can't, this will never work for you. You know, quite often I think cynics battle with judgment as well, whether it's judgments of others. But if you find yourself judging others, it's very, very likely that you are also being extremely judgmental toward yourself. So you're always kind of looking back at what you've experienced, expecting that that is always going to be the outcome in the future.
Right. This one is basically the self-doubt. And, you know, just like you said, it's like he who cannot trust cannot be trusted. And, you know, if you are, you know, like that cynic, that doubter to other people, my mm-hmm. guess is you'll find this one deep inside yourself as well.
Yeah.
Now, this one, you know, if the critic is the most harsh of the bunch, the cynic is the most disheartening of the bunch, because the
yes.
cynic usually speaks the truth. Technically, it is true that you have tried and failed many times to lose weight. And when dealing with the cynic, you must realize that although she is great at reporting on the past, she's not psychic and has no ability to predict the future. Because the cynic's words are comprised of part past, part future, they are full of what we call half-truths. And have you seen that in some of your clients as well, where they come in and they make like these big statements that they see as fact, when in truth it's only half fact?
All the time. Absolutely. The first thing that came to my mind is when I say, okay, well, you need to make sure you're drinking a lot of water. Oh, I totally drink a lot of water. I drink water all day long. Okay, well, what is your measure? How much water are you drinking per day? Because my perception of a lot of water versus your perception of a lot of water might be two completely different things. So I'm getting a half truth 50% of the time. Oh, well, I drink at least 4 glasses of water a day. And I'm like, okay, so you're only drinking something 4 times a day? Well, no, I drink lots of coffee. You know, I have tea at night. I usually have wine after dinner. I'm like, okay, so your lots of water is not the same as my a lot of water. So it is truthful that they're drinking a lot of water in their eyes, but it's a half truth because, you know, looking at the big picture, it truthfully is 4 cups of water is just not enough.
I can't lose weight. There's another one, you know,
yes.
and you say, well, wait a minute. Have you ever lost weight? Yeah. There was a time where I lost 20 pounds, but I couldn't keep it off. Oh, I get it. So you can actually lose weight. you just can't, you just find it difficult to keep that weight from coming back. So we need to look at what's worked for you in the past and then build on that to basically, so you can see that it's really the half truths that get us, right?
Yeah,
and
for sure.
And that's especially the case with the cynic. Now, yeah, go ahead.
The critic and the cynic are the easiest to spot usually because they're the hardest and harshest, and they can even be violent, to our psyche. They exist especially in the beginning of the change process because they're designed to prevent you from making the change. So this is that resistance that we were talking about, your body naturally having. It's trying to resist change.
Right. So there's actually the moment where you decide to make the change, and then there's the sustaining of that change. And the critic and the cynic are most impactful at the beginning when you're trying to decide whether or not to jump in and make this transformation, right?
Right, yes.
Now, as damaging as these two voices are, they are not the worst of the bunch. The two biggest foes that you will be forced to face are the procrastinator and the rationalizer. Mm-hmm. These two sneaky little gremlins creep into your mind under the radar and wreak havoc, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So the procrastinator is the one who tells you that one more donut or one more cookie will not derail your efforts. It's the one that tells you that tomorrow you'll be totally good, but tonight you can just let the slack out a bit. Go ahead, right. Have dessert, right?
Right. It's just that one little thing, in quotes, this one little thing or this one little time isn't going to hurt me. Or, it's kind of like the I'll start on Monday phenom.
Right. Yeah,
I'll start on Monday.
Yeah.
Or I know we haven't got there yet, but another one, I don't have gym clothes. I don't have new enough shoes. My tennis shoes have holes in them. It's raining outside. Some of these things that you think will only be a one-timer end up just piling on top of each other.
Right, with their whole intention being to put off that decision to do something, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole purpose of the procrastinator, to put off doing something now for later. It's I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Right.
So the rationalizer is the inner voice that tells you that you didn't have a choice, that you had to eat that fresh homemade pizza that your friend's Italian mother made with her own bare hands, and it would have been rude not to eat the pizza. So this voice says things like it would be rude not to eat the pizza or to be the only one not eating dessert or drinking wine or what have you. Right.
Peer pressure comes into play here a little bit too, because say your husband or wife makes a nice meal and you already had, maybe it was a, a big bowl of pasta and you just had pasta for lunch. You're going to eat it, or you're going to feel like you need to eat it. You're going to rationalize the fact that you need to eat this because, well, they cared enough to make that for you.
Right. Another way this presents is in the you deserve it.
Yes.
Phrase, right? Like it's the voice that causes you to open a gallon of ice cream when you're having romantic difficulties. Why? Because, man, you deserve it.
Yeah.
Or you've had a hard day at work. And
one of the most popular ones that I find is, well, I've got kids. I don't have time. And this is where you're not making time falls into play here in the rationalizer.
Or
it's
I've
a vicious
done
cycle.
So much for everybody. I deserve to have this entire box of donuts.
Yes.
So that's the rationalizer. It's the one that gives you really good reasons. Like there's always going to be reasons, and we're going to cover this here in when we get into the antidote for these voices. But there's always going to be reasons to not do that healthy thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the procrastinator and the rationalizer are especially damaging for three main reasons. The first is they happen under the radar. Right. They make bad choices look like the right choices. Unlike the critic and the cynic, the procrastinator and the rationalizer are what we call soft saboteurs. They're not in your face saying you suck. They're the ones that kind of make it, it's like beneath the radar. It's the soft saboteurs, the ones you don't see that just kind of nudge you off the cliff. Right.
Right. It's that little conversation in the back of your head.
That soft voice, right?
Yes.
So the second reason is they often work together to produce a synergistic attack on your ability to make good choices. You know, you can procrastinate and you can rationalize simultaneously. They feed off of each other. And you almost never feel the guilt until the deed is done.
Yes. You know, when you're rationalizing something in your mind, you're truly coming up with what you think in the moment are great reasons not to do something.
To put it off.
And to put it off. And that's a tough one. You know, that's a tough one to combat. But I think by sharing this with our listeners today, we're going to be at least bringing a new level of awareness to that.
Right. And the third reason is they shroud themselves in good feelings. Procrastination and rationalization take you out of pain for the moment.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, you know, when you're talking about, you know, wanting to eat that pizza, like you want to eat the pizza. You want
right.
to drink wine with the friends. You want to eat the donuts. And there's a pain associated with not doing those things in those moments. And the procrastinator and the rationalizer kind of say, oh, it's okay. It's all right. And it takes you out of pain for the moment.
Right. And us as the human being species, we are all about not being in pain. We'll do anything to avoid pain.
We will. More to avoid pain than we will to gain pleasure.
Yes.
So let's get into the antidotes for each of these inner voices.
Okay.
All right. So first and foremost, we've already done half the work for you guys, right? We've named them. We've brought them to your attention.
And now we're going to share the antidote.
So let's cover each inner voice and get into the leverage points for each of these inner voices. So let's start with the critic.
Okay.
So as I mentioned earlier, the critic is the most violent of the four inner voices. Her methods are very clunky and primal when you think about it. It's like the, you know, it's like the answer for everything is to make a fist and start punching and swinging, right?
Right. I think we start this at an early age.
I think you're right. And
yeah.
She attempts to basically stop your movement into uncharted waters by resorting to name-calling and mm-hmm. by attacking you at the level of your self-esteem. And we all have, you know, kinks in our armor, right, with self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And the critic, because this is in an inner voice, knows every one of yours. Mm. The interesting thing is the critic is not a natural phenomenon. In fact, her self deprecating ways are not at all natural or inherent. We aren't born saying stuff like, you're a lazy baby. Get your slothful butt out of this crib and do something with yourself. Or look at you wearing that diaper. Don't you have an ounce of dignity? Use the potty like everyone else. Nobody, you know, it's not like we're born with these thoughts, right, Blythe? They're
right.
handed to us.
We develop them over time because of the insecurities that we pick out about ourselves or that we develop over our lifetime.
Yeah, and even after we're weaned and we begin to develop a vocabulary and build a social network, we still don't abuse ourselves naturally. That is until someone else, usually somebody of higher perceived status, begins to label us. And, you know, if you think back, if you think of the things within where you have those kinks in the self-esteem armor, I'm willing to bet that if you think back, it will go all the way back to somebody who had some sort of power over you or some sort of higher perceived status. You know,
right.
For me,
well, it was the you're fat, give me back my shoe.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so the critic has a secret that it doesn't want you to know about. And here's the critic's dirty little secret. Are you ready for it?
Yes.
She isn't part of you at all. She's the parroted voice of family, friends, classmates, teachers, spouses, and colleagues of the past. She is not a natural part of you. She belongs to other people you've been exposed to during your life.
People that have critiqued you in the past.
Right. You know, when I was young, we would take these long trips to Florida in our brown Toyota minivan. It was like a futuristic looking van. It was like one of the first vans that had that kind of flat front, you know, since that made it look kind of futuristic.
Yeah. And, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. I think the painter that was at our house yesterday drives one of those.
Well, we thought we were cool having that van.
Yeah.
But, you know, during the trip, you know, I had two brothers and we were all about a year and a half apart. And during the trip, we would get very bored. And my older brother would grabbed my arm and hit me in the face with my own hand while he yelled, "Stop hitting yourself. Stop hitting yourself. Why are you hitting yourself?" Did you ever have that?
Yeah, I had a brother, and we had a little Honda, like Civic, and we would have to sit in the back seat. And my parents graduated to the point where they put a piece of cardboard in the back seat between us whenever we took our long road trips to California, because it was the same thing. Stay on your side. Don't cross the invisible line. And the invisible line was always crossed. So they resorted to making a real line.
Well, you know, when this would happen to me, we didn't have the cardboard, but, you know, I would yell, "Hey, Mom, Lauren is hitting me with my own hand." And my mom would, of course, come to the rescue like mothers do. Now, the critic is basically the figurative older brother who's forcing you to hit yourself in the face with your own inner dialogue. And you let him do it. That's the problem. Do you know why that is?
Why?
I'll tell you. Because you get something out of it. Right?
Mm-hmm. You get the rescue?
Right. When Lauren would grab my arm and hit me with it, all I would need to do is really tense up my arm, and he would not be able to hit me with it anymore. It wouldn't matter how big and strong he was due to the magic of leverage. If I would have just tensed my arm and held it tight to my chest, he would not have been able to move it. But I didn't. I let him use my own arm as a weapon against me. Why do you think I did that? Why do you think that most little brothers allow their older siblings to inflict this punishment without struggle? Because I and they get something from it. In this case, it broke the boredom, and I was happy to have the attention of my older, cool brother. In addition, Mom would come to my rescue and give me attention and pity for my younger brother curse, and I loved it. You know, yeah. I loved the attention and the drama more than I was bothered by the pain and humiliation.
Right.
So the critic within our heads exists because we get something from its existence. You know, for some, we love the drama that it brings to our lives. For others, we are addicted to the attention we get when our friends console us and say stuff like, "Oh, don't say that. You aren't a fat pig. You're one of the sweetest and most determined people that I know."
Yeah.
You know, if for others, the critic gives us an out, right? If we don't want to do something, the critic tears us down and we can say, "Poor me," as we lay on the couch for one more night, right?
Right.
So how do we
control the critic?
Well, first thing we have to do is catch it in action. You know, when we start to hear the name calling, we need to stop ourselves and ask a few questions.
Okay.
First question is, what is being said, right?
Okay.
What is being said? What is the actual words that we're using? Can you, you know, do you recall any, in the past clients that you've worked with, any situations or like verbiage that they use when they say, I'm doing this to myself. Is there any words that come up for you?
Not right off the top of my head, just because I wasn't prepared for that question. But, right. You know, sometimes it might be something like, I'm having a difficult time.
There's one.
You don't deserve it. Yes. That's a big one.
Yeah, they may not always say it in that way. And this is kind of what I want you to get from this first one is what is being said. The "you don't deserve it" phrase can come in many different fashions and flavors, right? Like there are many ways to say "you don't deserve this." And sometimes it's not said at all. It's just inferred.
Right.
And you have to be able to put these things to words so that you know when it's being said that the critic's the one that's saying it. Because the strategies we use with each of these inner voices differs from inner voice to inner voice, right?
Yeah, from person to person, absolutely.
So the second question is, who originally taught us to say that? You know, we remember that we said, the critic isn't yours. The critic is somebody else's voice in your head.
So who told you you don't deserve? Who told you you don't, you're not worth? I think worth is probably a big one that I get from a lot of my clients is, you know, I'm not worth this. And I don't know that people actually say those particular words to themselves, but I think a lot of people really hear that in their own heads.
Right. And so once we can put a name and a face to the person who said it, we can distance ourselves from the what's being said. We can come to the realization that it is not us. It's somebody else.
Right. You pinpoint it. So once you pinpoint it, you can start to work on that.
Right. So the third one is, what do I get from this type of self-talk? You know, we talked about this. What is the payout?
Well, you know, the payout is the poor me or the attention that you get and the I could wait another day. I mean, I know that's procrastination and we're not talking about that right now, but it allows you to feel like that is more okay.
Right. And then the fourth question, which I love to finish off with, is would a champion say this stuff to themselves?
Absolutely not. You wouldn't hear an Olympic runner who places last every time ever speak to themselves that way.
No. And so when we say that to ourselves, would a champion say this? If your goal is to ascend, is to escalate yourself, upgrade your thinking, upgrade your metabolism, then you have to think in terms of what is the inner dialogue of somebody who's succeeded, somebody who's achieved, these levels. Like, what would Bly say? What
Okay,
would
that's
Blythe
a
say to herself? It would be a good
right.
example of that. And, start using that terminology. And the reason you do that is because it's not enough just to try to stop yourself, because, nature abhors a vacuum. And you need to fill in the gap. You need to fill in the space with something much more positive in this case. What would a champion say? It
Right,
sure as
and
heck wouldn't say you're not worthy. Sure as heck wouldn't say you don't deserve this.
Exactly. And we know that everybody out there, we read the stories, we read the emails, we hear the comments, and we've seen these people, and they're all champions. Sometimes I think they just need to recognize that and then ask themselves, would a champion say stuff like this? Would, stop yourself in the moment and really think, you know what? Just stop for a moment, take a deep breath. Would a champion say this to themselves? Because you're really kind of browbeating, yourself, you're beating yourself up.
Yep, with your own hand.
Right.
Okay. All right, let's go on to the cynic. The cynic is a crafty one. She is a powerful form of self-sabotage because she speaks the truth. In fact, the cynic cannot lie, at least not entirely.
This is where those 50% truths come in.
Right. The cynic can't lie entirely. The critic can. And that's the thing. This is kind of what differs them. The cynic takes a little bit of truth and attaches a little bit of untruth and makes a statement that ultimately drives the direction of your life. She'll bring up past failures, and they will usually be undeniable, right? She will say things like, "You have tried low carb diets, and every time they fail. This diet is just another low carb diet, and you have a 0% record of success with low carb diets. This attempt will end like all the rest." So let's dissect that statement a little bit, because this is one we hear fairly often as well.
Yep, absolutely.
It's an undeniable truth that you've tried low carb diets before, okay? We can't argue with that. That is the truth part of the statement. It is an undeniable truth that you have failed every low carb diet that you have tried, and because these are totally accurate, you'll blindly accept the rest of the statement, which brings us to the cynic's weakness.
The
She speaks only
half-truth.
half-truths, right? So she accurately reports on past failures. However, she is not a fortune teller. She cannot determine what will happen to you in the future, right? And
Right.
that's where the self-limiting component comes in. If then, meaning that if I failed in the past, then I will fail in the future, is a very self-limiting formula when it's not used properly. Now, we've talked about if-then statements in the past where we use them proactively, right?
Right. Yes.
You remember that discussion?
That was just a few podcasts ago.
So, like, you can make statements into the future, like if I don't reach my water goal by 5 p.m., then I will, I'll drink two full glasses of water to catch up. That kind of
Okay.
thing.
Yeah, and that's a positive one.
Right. That's a
But
positive proactive step. But we're talking about
right.
all the past ones.
Right.
And the cynic need you to believe that beliefs equal reality. It works within the framework of our past and our beliefs about what those past experiences mean to us, because our past experiences make up the matrix from which our beliefs typically form. The cynic therefore has a lot of power over us because it's going back to stuff that we know to be true, right?
Right. Yeah. So to combat this, we must constantly be inventorying, I guess, our beliefs and look at them with a doubtful eye. So be cynical about the thought, right?
Right, exactly. You
Right.
can't say it any better than that.
Right.
This The answer to the cynic is being cynical.
Yeah.
About what the cynic is saying.
There you go. That's that just summed it up right there.
Right. So going back to the previous example, the experience that we had in the past was not being successful with low-carb diets. The belief that is attached to that experience is that low-carb diets don't work for you. To determine the validity of that belief, we have to dig a bit deeper by asking a series of questions. And you know, by the way, the solution to all of these different inner voices is basically to question them, right?
Yes.
Like you can literally sit down when you feel this, okay, low-carb diets don't work, you know, for example. Then you sit down in a chair. If you like the visual nature of it, you can put a chair in front of you and have a conversation with the cynic. Did the low carb diet result in weight loss? Would be the first question I'd ask.
Okay.
Almost like a lawyer, right? You're putting them on the stand.
We need the facts.
Right. Did the low carb diet result in weight loss, even if you couldn't maintain it? Yes. Yes. Okay. I did lose some weight when I was doing low carb. Now, how did you feel when you were on the low carb diet? Well, I felt like.
Low energy.
Hey, actually, let's do this, Blythe. Let's do this. I'll be the person who the cynic is talking to. You be the cynic. So you're sitting in the other chair. So, did the low carb diet result in weight loss?
Yeah, but I couldn't really keep it off. It was too hard.
But did it result in weight loss?
Yes.
Yes or no?
Okay. Yes.
Answer the question. Now, I'm just playing the role of the.
Yeah. No, I get it. I'm playing along
number
too.
Two, because that's what your mind's going to do, right?
Yeah.
It's going to say yes, but.
Yes.
But you need to get to the truth. You can't let them bring in the but component of it. So, did the low carb diet result in weight loss? Yes or no?
Yes.
How did you feel on the low carb diet?
Well, I felt like I was doing everything right. Here comes the magic word, but.
Mm-hmm. This is where you let the butt in.
Right. I felt low energy and I was always craving something carby right before I went to bed.
All right. So that brings us to the third question is why didn't it work for you? Did, you know, so go through those again. So it did cause weight loss. You felt that
good.
It wasn't sustainable.
Right. But it made me feel good, but it wasn't something I could do forever. Right.
Right. So why didn't it work? You said your energy levels weren't good.
It just wasn't sustainable. I felt like binging at nighttime on any carb I could find.
Right. Binging.
Yeah.
Cravings.
And then I just got tired of doing it.
Tired of doing it. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So if we lost weight on the low carb diet, but it failed to keep it off due to the fact that you got tired of doing it, your energy levels weren't great, you were finding that you were binging at night, then there is valuable lessons to be learned. And it would be inaccurate to say that a low-carb diet didn't work. It is true that we did not succeed for the long term with low-carb eating, but it would be a grave mistake to totally disregard low-carb methods of eating based on our past experience. So to remedy the cynic, all you need to do is to add a single word to the end of the sentence that you hear in your head. All right? So Blythe, give me a statement without the single word.
Okay. About low carb diets?
Yep.
Okay. So the last low carb diet I tried worked for me.
Well, let's go back to the statement. I know it's confusing. So here's what I'm trying to say. So you've tried low carb eating many times before. Mm-hmm. It didn't work for you. Then it won't work. It didn't work for you then, and so it won't work for you now, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So say that statement. Unless that's the word, right? So that's the magic word for the cynic. Unless, so you have tried. Okay, let me put it into first person. I've tried low carb eating many times before. It didn't work for me then, and it won't work for me now. And then the magic word?
Unless I can find a way to make it more interesting.
Right. Unless I can, you know, eat and do something about the cravings I'm having.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I can do something about the nighttime binging. So it's that word unless that is the kryptonite to the cynic, because it assumes that, yes, there's truth, But there's also truth on the other side of that truth, meaning that when you say unless, there are things you can do to impact how it worked out in the end, right?
Right. And that's a powerful word.
It is.
It wasn't powerful in my vocabulary until now.
Nice. So the future, because the future is not yet written, the cynic is powerless against the word unless because it can't speak negatively against something that hasn't been tried.
Right.
After all, the cynic is tethered to the truth. It will try to forecast the future, but it cannot lie to you. It can only provide a half-truth and then a belief to impact how that half-truth may be true for you in the future, right?
Right. So be open to the new beliefs. There, it's a brand new possibility.
Right. Exactly. And all you got to do is listen to the statement and then add unless to the end and then say what you've learned, right? Like, unless I maybe have a little bit of carbs after my workout in the evening, right?
Then maybe that would get rid of it. Yeah, there are all sorts of tools that we can utilize to minimize some of the complaints that I had about the low carb diet.
Right. And so, we use low carb as an example, but the cynic can show up in many different ways.
It could be any diet.
It could be any diet, any exercise plan, any type of lifestyle. It can be anything. And just know that the cynic is half truth, add unless to the end of the statement, and then fill in the blank, right?
Awesome. Yeah, no, I love that one. Simple.
What's the next one?
The next one is the procrastinator. So this is one of the ones I find people battle with the most. It's the I'll start Monday or I'll start dieting on Monday. I'll start working out on Monday kind of idea. It's one of the nastiest of the nasty inner voices because it shrouds itself like a wolf in sheep's clothing. The procrastinator is the voice responsible for the universal day of dieting, Monday. I'll start on Monday. The procrastinator lures you in with promises of starting someday. It even baits the hook with specific days or dates that the new you will appear. So, after Monday or after the holidays, the day after Thanksgiving, I'm really going to start. We know we're going to have a big meal. So you're kind of fortune telling here. You think that because something is going to happen, that it must happen, and then you'll start after. So it buys you a little extra time.
Later is the best answer to the question is what the procrastinator wants you to believe. And, I just did an email newsletter on the topic of one of the primary reasons why people fail to lose weight is because or fail to burn fat and achieve their fitness and fat loss goals is because they have not made the hardcore decision to get in the game. They're like that person who's sitting on the bench and they're like on the team, but they're not actually in the game. And the procrastinator's job is to prevent you from getting in the game. It will whisper in your ear, one more donut won't hurt you. You can go right back on the program tomorrow, but go ahead, have that donut today. Right. The procrastinator's motto is, in the scheme of things, one more day isn't going to matter.
Yeah, well, you'll one more day yourself into obesity because that particular day never, ever comes. It's like this mirage in the desert that never seems to get any closer, even though you're walking toward it.
Right, exactly. And the procrastinator thrives on the law of inertia, which states that an object in motion will stay in motion unless a force acts upon it. And the procrastinator is that force that stops the motion. Now, once the motion stopped, the law of inertia states that an object at rest will stay at rest unless a force is acted upon it. Right. And, the procrastinator and the rationalizer, to a great extent, are that force that keeps you from getting back on the horse, right? So to stop the procrastinator, you must set a goal. Build a plan and don't deviate from that plan even once until the goal is achieved or until the habit is solidified. It's not a sexy solution, is it?
No. It's very, very simple and actually sounds quite boring. But
it is boring.
It's like the 30-30 day challenge that we have. We ask people to walk every single day for 30 days for 30 minutes, the 30-30, and start building this new habit. It's something that we pay a lot of attention to in our 60-day challenge is building habits so we can get rid of the procrastinator once and for all.
Right. And one thing that you need to do, you can't just, we don't stop at just, you know, setting a goal, building a plan, and not deviating from the plan. What we want to do is build deviations into the plan on our own terms. You do this by building basically a rule book for yourself. If, you know, popcorn is your weakness, for example, you may decide that popcorn, you can eat popcorn, but only on movie day, which is Sunday for a lot of people. It's like they go to the movies, you can have popcorn then. Okay. You know, no movie, no popcorn. That's the rule. When you do order a popcorn, you got to buy the child size popcorn. We've talked about this in the past, mm-hmm. I think way back when in the mindfulness eating podcast
episode.
That's
the one. That's the one. We even talked about the plates, different size plates and everything.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so you're basically, you're grabbing control of the machine that is you, and you're still able to incorporate things that bring you great joy, but you've set rules in place so that the procrastinator works on this idea that you can do what you want when you want, right? Like, that's how the procrastinator gets its power. Like, because we have free will and we actually can do what we want when we want, when you start to look out and see all of the nice niceties out there, all of the pleasant foods, all of the, you know, the couches and you know, chairs to sit in and all of these wonderful things that you can do. And then you look over here and you see a bowl of lettuce and a dry chicken breast.
Okay.
Like the
you feel like you're missing out.
Right. And the procrastinator will use the extremes of that, right? Like Blythe, you like to do in the challenge, you oftentimes will post like cool recipes that are healthier versions of unhealthy foods.
Yeah.
And so the procrastinator likes to set up two possibilities: dry chicken breast with leaves and twigs versus a pizza or a donuts or things that are just, so it's like these extremes on both sides. Mm-hmm. Whereas there is a nice healthy middle ground that is oftentimes not that far off from the extremely unhealthy food that you want, that would be a good lateral shift for you, right?
Right. Yeah. Like, for instance, it could be that big bowl of lettuce with the dry chicken breast on top, and then add your favorite dressing and some croutons. Add, you know, if you love grape tomatoes or cherry tomatoes, throw those in there. Throw your favorite ingredients and really spice up that salad so it becomes irresistible to you.
Right. And, you know, you might throw some craisins on there, even a few of those little oranges that
some blue
that
cheese crumbles. Oh, yeah. We're totally talking about your rainbow salad there at the cafe. Right.
And a lot of people might say, well, craisins have sugar in them, you know, and there's fat in that dressing.
That's a hell of a lot better than sitting on a couch eating a donut.
Right. Exactly. And the procrastinator loves to hide that fact.
Right. You
know, it loves to hide the fact that yeah, you can have something that is 75% better than what you want to eat over there and still end up feeling satisfied and satiated.
Yes, and you will feel better after the fact.
Right. Excellent. All right, let's go into the rationalizer, which is the last of the voices. Okay. And the rationalizer likes you to believe that the wrong actions are actually the right actions.
Yeah.
Quote unquote, given the circumstances.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me say that again, because that is really the teeth of the rationalizer. It wants you to believe that the wrong actions are actually the right actions given the circumstances.
Right. So for instance, well, I can't go to the gym tonight because my son's soccer practice has been canceled and the gym is right near the soccer practice and I've only got a quarter tank of gas. So I'm going to make the wrong choice and not go to the gym tonight, break my habit, and you know, we're going to go get dinner out somewhere instead.
Right. Going back to that pizza example, well, mm-hmm. You know, the wrong choice would be just, you know, stuff your face with pizza. But the rationalizer says, given the circumstances, the fact that this Italian lady made this pizza up with her own bare hands from her own private restaurant, it would be rude of me to not eat it. Therefore, it's the right action to eat, you know, to stuff my face with the pizza, given the circumstance that this was made by this woman, and it would be rude of me not to eat it.
Yeah, I think guilt plays a large role here, and that's something that we can often identify is, oh, geez, I felt so guilty after I ate that, or I feel so guilty. I'm going to my mother-in-law's house, and she made all of this food for us. You know, we end up feeling guilty afterwards, which means that's kind of like the blinking light saying, hey, wake up call. That's not a choice that I actually really wanted to make. So you rationalize that decision.
Right. And within any given day, there are at least 1 to 2 dozen opportunities to diverge from your healthy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And an opportunity could be defined as any situation where an argument could be made that eating junk food or not exercising would be the right thing to do. You know, for example, you had a tough day. You deserve to have a gallon of ice cream.
Or a glass of wine.
Or a bottle of wine. Or, you know, you went all day without eating. You deserve to get whatever you want at the Cheesecake Factory.
Right.
Or you lost 10 pounds already. How awesome is that? You deserve a brownie sundae for your hard work.
Right. Instead of a pedicure or a manicure or something that will keep you on course.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, do any of these phrases sound familiar to any of you guys listening out there?
I'm willing to bet. Absolutely certain they do.
Probably practically everybody in one way or another has heard this voice come up.
Yeah.
You know, aside from the right thing to do argument, the rationalizer also likes to make you believe that you really have no other option.
Okay.
I'll give you an example.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So Liz and her sister are part of our weight loss group, and they've been making great progress. They were at a friend's house, and their friend's Italian mother had made the homemade pizza, mm-hmm. right? Liz and her sister eat the pizza. Now, you know, I'm okay with eating pizza at a party on occasion or having a glass of wine or whatever, you know, grabbing a handful of popcorn while you're at a birthday party or something or at the movies. The problem is that the explanation of why they ate the pizza, that, you know, we couldn't turn it down because her mother made the pizza from scratch and it would have been rude or it would have been rude. My husband made me dinner. It would have been rude not to eat that. But if you would have said something like, I made a conscious decision to enjoy the pizza while we were at a special occasion. We wanted to enjoy it. You know, that's a completely different statement. You know, then to that, I could say, well, that's great. Did you save me a piece?
Right. The thing about this is the fact that when you put it on somebody else out there, you take the power away from yourself.
Right.
You know,
and the accountability.
Right, like you're saying, I had to eat it because of them, right?
Yes.
Because she made it with her hands.
That's this is a common one.
It is a common.
Yes.
And a thousand different ways, right, Blythe? Like we hear it a thousand different ways.
Oh, yes.
Like you said, if they would have said, you know what, we were at this party, there was this handmade delicious pizza by this woman who came from Italy, and used her secret family recipe to make this pizza. And we just made the decision, you know what? We want to enjoy this pizza. We want to experience this pizza.
Mm-hmm.
We would have said that was such a great way to look at it.
Good for you.
Good for you, right. Mm-hmm. But that's not what they did. And you know, we say that how you do one thing is how you do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, the question that we could ask is, how else does this show up in your life, right? Where else does this show up in your life in this fashion? There is a big difference between eating a pizza because you feel you have to and eating pizza because you feel this is a special occasion and it would enhance your experience of that party and life. And you know, that way you can fabricate a plan forward. You can say, okay, I had this pizza. I enjoyed it. I made the decision to do this. Now let me go and just go back to my healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, and that was delicious and I really enjoyed it. It's okay to enjoy things like that. You know, that comes kind of full circle to the guilt. You don't feel guilty about it if you recognize the fact that you made that conscious decision to enjoy the pizza.
Rather than the rationalizer voice, which will, if it gets an inch, it's going to take a mile. So that rationalizer voice, once it knows that it will work, you know, that the verbiage it's using in your mind, it has you in its grips. That's right. And so the antidote to the rationalizer, this one's actually simple. It's accepting total and all-encompassing personal responsibility for your own life. That's it. It's extreme personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you say, I have total control over my circumstances or my interpretation of these circumstances and will not be influenced by people or environment, well, then you're living with integrity And we've already discussed how vital that is. We've discussed it on multiple occasions. But
there's a new level of pride that comes with that too. Being able to accept the responsibility for the choices that you're making. That really, I think, is a golden nugget in shifting mindset here.
Right. And, before we kind of finish up for the day, I do want to point out that, you know, we talk about there being the black art and the white art of burning fat and losing weight. Mm-hmm. And, these things that we talk about, you know, we're using examples throughout this discussion on the four inner voices. What we're not trying to say is that this is the way that you basically white knuckle your way through life, right? You white knuckle your way and you try to just live on leaves and twigs all day long. Like, it's not our intention to get you to eat nothing but vegetables and fruits all
salad
day.
Salad and dry chicken breasts, right?
Right. What we want you to do through this discussion is basically to take the reins back of decision making, not allowing the critic, you know, to decide who you're going to be in life, not allowing the procrastinator to put off this necessary shift that you need to make now so that you can live a more energetic, confident, exciting life filled with health and vitality. Right. To not allow the rationalizer to remove your choice from this. You know, you are the one who's driving the ship, and the rationalizer wants to take that away from you. And you need to be on guard against that. And then the cynic. Oh, the cynic. Don't let that stop you. Don't let the cynic decide that that it's just not going to happen for you because it's never happened for you before.
Right. If that were the case. Don't let it predetermine your future.
That's right. Yep. 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 And what was the magic word, folks? When the cynic rears its ugly head?
Unless.
All right. So that's all I got. What else you got?
That's about it, actually. I had made some notes just regarding the rationalizer, and I just want to go back real quick and touch on this. One of the biggest ones, and I'm not picking on people at all because I've been there too, but having kids or having a job or having to keep the house clean, all of these things help you enable that rationalizer in your life. And there are ways that these things can be done. And it does start with recognizing that you're in control of your life and in control of what the outcome is going to be. And, you know, Ray, you're living with young kids right now. Mine are getting older. They're in middle school and high school now, and one's graduated college. But boy, that's probably 90% of the females that I hear from anyway. You know, well, I've got kids and I just don't have time. Don't allow that excuse to hammer into your head that rationalizer, because that's a big one. And I think a lot of people will connect with that. And again, taking accountability, taking on personal responsibility for your life will help you through that, because it's not comfortable. It's not comfortable when you find yourself in a position like that where you feel helpless and you have to rationalize everything because of something else.
Absolutely. And, those are the four inner voices and their antidotes. Simply seeing them and hearing them is enough to spark major changes, because you can now spot them when they're showing up in your life. I encourage you to go back and listen to this lesson over and over again. Yes. So that you can adopt this knowledge into your operating system. Once it's there, the four inner voices that sabotage your success will have no place to hide, and you'll feel stronger and more powerful because of it.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a great podcast. I definitely would tell people to go back and listen a few times. In fact, I'll probably go back and listen to this once it's up and ready for our listeners. It's a good one.
Awesome. Check us out at cutthefatpodcast.com. Facebook, go to just search for Cut the Fat Podcast and you'll find us. Be sure to rate us on iTunes if you get a chance.
Yeah, and we've had some great reviews happening, and I'm always excited to read the good ones. Not that we get many bad ones, but geez, right. You know, you get two or three over the course of 10 years and they're heartbreaking. So guys, give us a good review.
That's funny. Yeah, it is. You think that you can, this is where one of the inner voices, that's like the critic coming into play, right? It's funny that you said that, though. All right. You guys know where to find us. And if you're interested in joining the 60-day Cut the Fat Challenge, the whole purpose of the challenge is to get you guys into consistent action. That's it. It's not about more information so much as it is about transformation. And, you know, we do them every 60 days, so it doesn't matter when you're listening to this podcast episode. In all likelihood, one is coming up. Get in on it. Get in the game. And we'll help you with these inner voices along the way. Sound good?
And yeah, they can find information on that. If you go to cutthefatpodcast.com, just click on the tab in the upper right corner that says Coaching Club, and we can help you out.
Get on the list. All right. We'll see you guys next time here on Cut the Fat Podcast.
Bye.